Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino getting ready for some feed drop action of a podcast that I was a part of over on our sister site, Post Show Recaps over the weekend. Of course, Post Show Recaps is where we have all of our scripted TV podcasts, and Josh Wiggler and the gang over there at Post Show Recaps had launched a Patreon of their own back in the beginning of October, and it has been a lot of fun, and there are a ton of perks going on over there at Post Show Recaps. And in an effort to continue to build the patron base over there, they started a community rewatch podcast with a little bit of a flair of a focus on the Post Show Recaps community. It's called the Community Building Podcast, and Josh Wiggler and Jessica Sterling have been going through and cherry-picking some episodes out of the TV show Community. Josh has never watched it. Jess and many others would like a full Community rewatch. Josh says it will happen if there are 1,000 Post Show Recaps patrons. So in their ongoing quest, I joined the podcast to bring some of my scorching hot community takes along with the great Xfinity TV's own Gordon Holmes to talk about what was going on over there in Season 3, Episode 4, Remedial Chaos Theory with Josh Wiggler and Jess Sterling. So if you like this, go back and listen to all of the community building podcast episodes. They are on the Post Show Recaps Patreon. Go to postshowrecaps.patron to hear all of those and check out everything that Josh Wiggler has going on. Tons of behind the scenes perks, patron podcast feed, and more over at postshowrecaps.com/patron, and enjoy us talking about Season 3, Episode 4 of Community.
New to the show, gathers a team, goes with the flow and the talent you see. It's what you said you want to hear, but did you know it expires at the end of the year? Without 1,000 patrons by that day, no more fun, the podcast goes away.
Yeah, that's right. It's another episode of Community Building here on the Post Show Recaps Patreon. Thank you, Corey B., for that lovely introduction, as always. I'm Josh Wiggler. I have, I guess, a couple of different options for who I could bring in first here on the podcast this week. It's too many decisions to have to make. I'm just going to roll the dice real quick, see which option comes up. Oh, it's a two. That's for Jess Sterling. Jess, the timeline where you're introduced second has occurred.
Roxanne.
Nope. Stop. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Most timelines, I feel like that's the appropriate response to me beginning the podcast that way.
I think that sounds right to me. All right, let's roll the dice. Let's see who we're going to introduce third. Oh, wow, look at this. So this is somebody who we did not announce last week was even going to be on the podcast. But here he is, making his community building debut. It's the great Gordon Holmes. Gordon Holmes, what are you doing here?
Oh, the great Gordon Holmes. Thank you, Josh. I do have a bone to pick with you, my friend. Now, how did this community podcast come about? My understanding is that, like, if a certain amount of people signed up for your for the podcast.
Jess, do you want to take this for?
Yeah, please, Jess.
Essentially, I just harassed Josh on Twitter because he had never seen the show, and I said, "How dare you not see this show?" And a lot of people liked that tweet and retweeted that tweet, and we just peer pressured Josh into watching Community and podcasting about it a little bit.
And this was like part and parcel with we launched the Patreon. It was like the same week we launched the Patreon. We're feeling good. We've got a good launch. There's lots of people who are saying, "Hey, I want to be a part of this." And feeling really great. And I'm feeling a little loopy myself. And I'm like, all right, Jess, you know what? You've worn me down at least to a degree that I'd be willing to talk about some community because I haven't seen the show before, but it should be a show that I spend some time on. And I'd be willing to do it as long as A, it's a spot where we can also be talking about the community we're building here on the Post Show Recaps Patreon. And beyond that, we'll do a full-scale community watch, but on the very lofty condition that we reach 1,000 patrons by December 31st, 2020, at 11:59 p.m. on the East Coast.
Right, and so I didn't mean
terms.
I didn't mean to interrupt the introductions, but here's my issue is it's like you're doing us a favor watching Community.
Yeah.
Where Community is its own favor and is worthy of your time. I was following you on Twitter, just getting madder and madder.
Yeah.
Still a little annoyed.
Well, so let's bring in, I don't even need to roll the dice anymore because we have the last person to get introduced here with the prestigious and credit. Rob Cesternino. Hi, Rob.
Yeah. Hey, I made pies for everybody. Uh-huh. Who wants some?
Guys, we all agreed before we got on here that we're not eating the pie, right?
Yes. Yes. No, very, very happy to be here talking about Community.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, Rob maybe can weigh in on, like, you know, it's not a nothing deal to say, like, I'm going to set apart
Gordon. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. That there's nothing more Josh Wiggler than talking about doing a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is very me. It's very on brand.
You want some other straightforward Community recap? You go somewhere else, Gordon. You
find
Holm.
It.
As back in the day when Community was on the air, I feel like I would go on Rock House a podcast. We would talk about Survivor. We would talk about Community. So if I have Josh be like, I don't know, guys, maybe if enough love comes my way, I was like furious. I'm like, Josh,
I don't care about the love. It's really the money. You know, it's about the money mostly. You know, the love comes second, but the money is first.
Respect.
Jess, we knew Rob was coming, and then we announced that Rob was going to be on the podcast last week, and then. Was it Brendan Fitzpatrick?
I think it was Felipe. I think it was Felipe. Yeah. Put a tweet or put a link in the Discord that was a link to Rob and Gordon's previous conversations on Community back in 2011 and 2012.
Yeah.
I went back and I listened to all of those podcasts.
Okay.
Just to research and out of curiosity.
How you guys feeling? A little nervous.
Remind us how that Gordon. Yeah. I know Gordon is the from what I recall, Gordon is the hardcore Community guy. I was probably like probably Community for me is like the same way I follow the Knicks. Like when it was good, I was right there through all those playoff years. Yeah, Patrick Ewing, John Starks, baby Charles Oakley.
A long time ago.
But then in the lean years, that I got the hell out of there.
That makes sense. I think I'm more of a like when I go back. Like I don't watch late seasons of Community that much. I don't watch early seasons of Seinfeld. I don't watch late seasons of Friends. You know, the time is too precious in this day and age to waste on mediocre TV because there's so much good TV. So, yes, I obviously did watch every episode of Community. But, you know, when I go back and rewatch, I'll stick to the core seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of the funnest takes were Rob saying that Donald Glover is going to be the biggest star and most unlikely to come back for a Community movie.
Nailed it. Oh,
nailed it.
What year was that? 2012?
That was in 2012.
Yeah, baby.
That was into season three. And I believe, to be fair to Gordon, I believe he also mentioned something similar in another podcast with you. You both kind of had the same take.
We've been new.
Yeah.
Donald Glover.
Rob thought Sawyer was just okay in the paintball episode, Josh.
You know, I mean, like he's not like super electric. He's Sawyer. He's Sawyer in a cowboy suit. I'm not furious with that take.
Okay.
I don't fully agree with it, but I'm not furious with the take. Feels like
old
a Rob take. I'm okay with that. I'm all right with that.
Gordon prefers contemporary American poultry to modern warfare, just like Josh Wiggler.
I do as well, Gordon.
They might ask like what your favorite episode is. And I don't know if I do favorite episodes, but I do the episodes where it's like, this show is special. And I have written in my notes right here, contemporary American poultry. So it's right. Nice.
Here's I feel redeemed.
A fun fact about me, in case you're unfamiliar with how I work, my brain is Swiss cheese in the same way as Quantum Leap, Swiss cheese brain. Like, I don't, like, you know, when we talk about Survivor, I can't tell you the first boot from Cagayan or Up and Down and things like that, or even what my opinion was.
On Netflix!
What my opinion was 5 minutes ago. So the fact that I kept an opinion for 8 years is really amazing.
That's exciting. Isn't it nice sometimes to know that, like, you are your true self?
I'll do things like when I do pregame interviews, like for Survivor, I'll ask a question and they'll say something and in my brain I'll be like, oh, I wish I had followed up with this. And then I will, because I'm listening to it a year later and I'll be like, way to go, Pastor Gordon.
Yeah.
One of Rob's takes that I don't think Josh will agree with, this was when they returned mid-season to season three, so that for context, Shirley is Rob's least favorite character.
Least favorite. Why did you not like Shirley, Rob?
I don't really remember. I just feel like that she probably didn't have a thing.
Yeah.
Actually, watching this episode, I had that thought. Is the Shirley, and I think Dan Harms even admitted this, he kind of didn't know what to do with her at points. And I think this episode, and we can get into this later, is a perfect example of them not knowing what to do with Shirley.
Yeah, I think more season five for me is when they lose me on Shirley more. But this episode does kind of bring out points of that as well. Also, I thought, because we've talked, so for reference, Robin Gordon, we talked a lot about Pierce and like his turn to becoming the major villain with the Dungeons and Dragons episode and the end of season two. And then are kind of some of us in the community's problem with they kind of walk that back in season three, and he's immediately just kind of like part of the group again. And we see it in this episode. Mm-hmm. Gordon has a quote here I wrote down. It's too ridiculous to think the group would still hang with Pierce. A good bad guy, you want to see them beat up. A bad bad guy, you don't want to see them on your television.
You want to see them at all.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's an old wrestling, in wrestling, you have a baby face and your heel, and a good heel is somebody who makes the baby face more popular. People buy tickets to see that person get what's coming to them. Like a bad guy, you just turn the channel, and, Pierce had, that Pierce had some instances of that. Definitely.
How did the two of you get to podcasting about Community? Rob, do you recall how this must have been very early, yeah. Rob, as a podcast?
I mean, I was very, yeah, I was cutting my teeth of trying to get the Survivor podcast going. Gordon was doing exit press from as early as I started. And I think that I'm not even sure if did we talk about Lost first, or did we talk about Survivor, or we talked about both?
The way we met was for Heroes versus Villains. CBS reached out with the power rankings I used to do with one person for a full season, and Heroes versus Villains, we had different people doing it each week, and you were one of those people. That's how we met. Yeah. I imagine we probably did talk about Lost. The woman I was dating at the time, was a Lost reporter, had written the Lost encyclopedia. I'd actually been on location a couple times as a photographer for Lost magazine.
Coming back to me, yes.
That's probably how we got our start, and then obviously Survivor.
Was like within like the first like 3 months of Rob as a podcast. And then
where does the top 20 NBC Thursday night characters?
That's somewhere I think on YouTube. I think that's like 2011.
You referenced that on the podcast in 2012. I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's legendary.
Oh, geez. I'm still getting flashbacks from forgetting Niles Crane.
People got mad.
People are so mad.
People should now understand, though, that's not like you didn't
Swiss
do it
cheese out brain.
Of. Yeah, it was Swiss cheese brain. Like, relax. It wasn't out of spite.
Yeah. And know? I think that was before I was super into Parks and Rec. I think that would be, that list would be very different today.
Yeah, you mentioned that on the podcast because you were upset that you didn't include Ron Swanson on it.
Yes. I was a big Parks and Rec guy then. Now I am.
Yeah.
I love getting the OG Troy and Abed in the morning of Community podcasting in this extended.
Yeah. No, and then we probably did like a check-in like every season about like, how's it going?
Yeah, I could only find. So basically, the first one was from mid-season two. You also had one with Nicole. Actually, so you started with Nicole in 2011 talking about it on Rob Has a Web Show.
Yeah.
Because Gordon got you into Community. And then the last one I could find was from March 2012, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And most of it was mixed with Survivor and Community kind of mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Kalish made a... You pronounced his name Kalish, and I thought that was
He became very big time quizster, quizmaster on the podcast,
creator of Seeds Baby. Sure,
yes. Mm-hmm. Can you explain Seeds Baby to me? By the way,
Every day, every morning, Jordan Kalish eats a bagel, and that he recently made a Twitter video about him showing like that he has a Tupperware full of everything bagel seeds. And then when sometimes he gets a bagel that doesn't have enough seeds, he goes to his Tupperware full of seeds and then applies more seeds.
Seeds, baby.
Yeah. He made like a video like showing this off, and then Seeds, baby.
Wow. And then that really took off, huh?
It's so ridiculous.
Is this Jordan's most popular piece of content?
Far and away.
Yeah. Have you heard of this, Gordon? put growing seeds on a, on an already seeded bagel?
There's got to be some kind of adhesive.
The cream cheese is
Okay, got it. Got it. Okay.
That makes sense.
Yes, but he doesn't buy his own. They sell it. No, he just takes every day the leftovers.
Wait, excuse. He's taking leftover seeds from the bagels and then putting them in a Tupperware.
Puts them in the Tupperware. Waits not, want not, Josh Wiggler.
I mean, I feel a little weird about that, but that feels like a completely different.
In essence, like that's metaphor.
Darkest timeline stuff.
No, that's a metaphor for this community podcast because you are just like you're just taking like I'm eating the best stuff, but all the crumbs of these other episodes you're not talking that Jessica is sweeping them up into the Tupperware.
Yep.
And hopes to one day dump them out into a full podcast.
That's the hope. Right, Jess? The hope is that this is we're just taking best bites. But then it does make you wonder, like, what does the bagel look like when we decide to attack the full thing?
This might be a controversial opinion incoming, but I think Josh Wiggler is watching Community the right way.
Hey! I'm not getting back up here from my podcasting.
Gordon's
dad.
Head is going to explode. Gordon's head is about to just...
Rob, let's get into that more. Get under the hood of
so
that.
Bad. It gets so bad. I would say, watch the first three seasons and then turn it off.
It does not get Friends bad. It does not get Dexter bad. There are still gems to be found.
Well... just to tell you my Community history, that I was like at the height of Community, like I was in as much as anybody. But at the end of season three, spoiler alert, Dan Harmon leaves. The show is not the same. Then he comes back.
Fire Lake. Everyone agrees that sucks, right?
And season six is like, did it even happen? I don't know. So I feel like that the show got very far away. Like, I really feel like that permission to speak freely, but I feel like that the show's, head goes so far up its butt, later on that it's trying so hard that these one-offs, paintball, all these episodes that they break the format of the show, it was like taking a hit of crack cocaine. So I hear they got addicted to breaking the format. They got addicted to breaking the thrill of, oh my God, bravo, bravo, Community, that they wanted to break the format so badly. They forgot what the format was and they were incapable. It was like a sketch. It's like a sketch show.
And eventually like that high wears off, right?
You can't do, you know, 19 break the mold episodes in a season
in a row.
You lose the mold.
What's
you've
the
broken
mold?
It. You've smashed it to smithereens.
You don't even remember what the mold was anymore. Now it has to be watched and sterilized.
Yeah, and you just start on screening these guests before they come on for what their takes are. Maybe we should have led with Gordon and just
No, I love this. This is
Don't add me.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with Rob.
Rob, you need to take a quick minute to just like shave the sides of your beard so that you can just be in full goatee.
Also, that being said, while you put your phones down, that I really enjoyed watching this episode. The 22 minutes flew by. Okay.
Great. Gordon, your rebuttal, sir.
Here's the thing. I'm not going to completely disagree with Rob. And I remember around the time of the G.I. Joe episode, spoiler alert, where it's like, why? Like, it, you know, and they had to use that Jeff had was unconscious or things like that to justify that. And I agree with Rob that, you know, there's a point where a comedy can be too smart and it stops being funny.
Like Muppet Babies.
Right. And maybe this is a good example of it. This episode.
I hope we're not where, disparage Muppet Babies.
they're so interested in telling these seven different stories that there is no narrative flow. You know, Dan Harmon's kind of famous for his like plot circle where there's eight different points. Yeah. Like, you know, you want something, you go out to get it. Like, I don't remember them all specifically. There's an episode of Rick and Morty that like, very, very specifically describes it. And it gets away from that. And there is a thing where it's like, oh, I get it. They're doing a space movie. I get it. They're doing this is their Western. I get it. And that's a point where, you know, it does take you out of following characters you enjoy. So the argument I always used, Rob, was Community had the highest peaks, right? And like some pretty low valleys. Whereas something like Parks and Rec, once again, once it found its place, it was consistently great. Maybe it never hit the same peaks the Community did, but like it was just across the board kind of amazing. And then, you know, the Yahoo season, it happened. I've seen it. But you do reach a point. I have the DVD. It absolutely happened. But you do reach a point where you know Troy's gone, Pierce is gone, Shirley's gone. It, you know, it is kind of like shambling along and introducing new characters and things like that. Maybe it's best just to call it a day.
Yeah. We're not saying that Community is Parks and Rec, because it certainly is not. But that's why we've always compared Community to Lost, because it is much more of like a, we love it warts and all. And I think I would be remiss if I did not stick up for season 5, because season 5, I think it has some excellent, excellent episodes. Season 6, beyond the finale, is not my favorite. But season 5 is pretty good, especially when you're coming back from season 4. So yeah. I don't think this is one of those situations where you watch seasons 1 through 3 and you're done with it. I think you can, if you want to skip over season 4, like completely get that. But I think when you come back with season 5, there's a strong grouping of episodes from season 5. Like Gordon was saying, season 6 is not so great, but let's get into the proper episode.
Can I add one more thing? Because yeah. I feel like that what the show does, what it does so well is that, you know, that, and you know, season 1 is a very like traditional show, and then they sort of break the format a couple of times, but in like the broken format, like they have moments that sort of like are important and have bearing on the rest of the story, even though they happen like sort of like outside the scope of the traditional episode. But I just think that they go so outside the lines so much that it's impossible to even know what is even happening anymore on this show.
Yeah. So I gotta say, I have to speak here that I think it's very compelling that here we are, we've gathered, Jess, we've got like A++++ tier commentators to talk about what is described as the best episode of Community. Many people say, right. I've heard this multiple times. Wait for Remedial Chaos Theory. Wait for Remedial Chaos Theory. Darkest Timeline. You're going to lose your mind. And we have spent, you know, like close to 20-ish minutes talking about why Community is get out while you can, or don't, or like let's absolve like certain things from the future. But this is,
yeah.
But I'll say, and Rob, I think you know me well enough to understand that this is where I often, enjoy things the most from this vantage point. And this is why I say to you, Jess, and to the rest of the community building populace, fear not. This excites me. You know, the fact that there is like this huge diverse opinion of like people who are like Community is like the A+ sitcom of all time. Its valleys are part of it, like warts and all. And then the people who have their very, very specific feelings on what is a wart and what is not.
Yeah,
that I love that component of it as somebody who is coming into it really late in this very funky way without any of that investment. This type of conversation is why I have enjoyed delving into the waters of Community so much.
I also want to just add, like, everybody, that I am not here to tell you you should not watch Community. I'm just telling you why I did not keep up with Community. And I tried, and I went back probably at the start of every single season. But I'm just telling you that this is why I have fallen off and never done a complete series finish of Community, even though I was one of the biggest Community fans at the time it was airing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think with this episode, too, even this episode, surprisingly enough, I got a lot of feedback, and surprisingly enough, there were maybe like a quarter or a third of people saying, this isn't my favorite episode. And the reason is because it's not the funniest episode. It is not the funniest episode. However, it is the best episode. It's the best showing of Dan Harmon, his crew, the timelines. Like, it is the most like out there, best concept episode that there is. If you want something funny, I would go somewhere else in Community, but I think this kind of just shows what they can do and sets up everything going forward, I think.
Well, that's a really interesting categorization, in that over the summer Lindsay and I binge watched Schitt's Creek, and you know, we loved it, but I know
that's good too.
Yeah, Josh, have you seen that?
No,
yeah. How many people?
The two of you. Come on.
That Nicole, my wife loves it, and I've actually watched one episode this week. Okay.
How about this? If we don't hit 1,000 people for community, we'll reset the clock to 1,000 to starting shits.
Always going for them dollars. I get it, Josh. Yeah. What does it cost to start our Schitt's Creek podcast? But I guess the point I was making was I would watch episodes and not laugh, but they were still good episodes. So, mm-hmm. you know, because it had good character beats or things like that. So, you know, I don't think this is the funniest episode of Community. I do think it's a very good episode of Community. So, you know, I guess it depends on how you rank things. Like, you know, I think there are much funnier episodes, but, you know, as far as like what they were trying to accomplish and maybe one of the best examples of alternate timelines that exists in media, you know, this is it.
Yeah. Gordon, you mentioned a little while ago, you dropped a reference to Rick and Morty, which I know Dan Harmon is the co-creator of. And so I think for me, Remedial Chaos Theory hit me in sort of this realm of like, this feels like a Rick and Morty prologue. Like this feels like a pilot for a lot of the territory that they get into with that show, because they're often dealing with alternate dimensions and alternate universes and timelines and stuff like that. Does that sound like fair play to you? Not Johnny. Does that sound like a fair assessment of like Remedial Chaos Theory's place in history, that this is almost like a prelude to a different creative endeavor?
Oh, absolutely. And the thing with Rick with Dan Harmon is I'm sure. He went to great lengths to make sure everything added up. And as I watched it and rewatched it, I'm like, okay, Britta's doing this because Abed's not there to stop her and all these different things tie together. Like, you know, he's so meticulous with these kinds of things. And that's what he brings to Rick and Morty, which is why only smart people can watch Rick and Morty. Mm. I'm going to get grief over that.
I don't think so.
Hey, no. I'm dumb and I watch Rick and Morty.
But do you appreciate it? Do you appreciate it on the level I do, Rob?
I went to McDonald's and demanded Szechuan sauce.
Yes, you were there too. Oh my God. But yeah, I think for me, like it felt just like a first shot towards where Dan Harmon's interests seem to go. And you know, that's also another show that in the same vein, I was going to say mold, but that's broken, the same vein as Community, episodes take on like different genres and are like, you know, this is like the horror movie episode of Rick and Morty. Right. So I think one of the things, as somebody who really loves that show, that I feel like I'm appreciating from Community along the way, but didn't come into focus for me, was like how, a lot of these episodes are laying track towards what Dan Harmon is going to do with Justin Roiland as well, of course. But for this episode, you mentioned that this is also like, without Remedial Chaos Theory, we don't go where we're going. So is this like a critical mythology episode that we're getting into right now?
Even on a character level, you kind of, like you were saying, we see what happens when each individual character leaves the room, right? So I think we're heading in the direction of, is Jeff really the leader of the group, right? When he leaves, everybody's dancing and having a wonderful time. He doesn't interrupt Britta singing, you know? Great things happen. When Troy leaves, all hell breaks loose, and it is the absolute darkest timeline. So I think you're getting minor, like small character beats. We're obviously getting the, like, as Shirley calls them, the googly eyes between mm-hmm. a couple of the romantic pairings.
Is this a spoiler free podcast?
No. I think that I'm pretty cool with you saying whatever. And mm-hmm. I think most people who are listening to this have either watched Community or are at that level of like, yeah, just say what you're going to say.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry.
All right. Okay, yeah, Gordon, I was going to just get something else off my chest. Because one of the things I really hated about Community here is the Jeff and Annie relationship.
Oh,
it
Jess.
Sucks.
He's coming
so
for you.
So bad. So bad. Total Jim and Pam schmoopy vibes. And
no.
Jess is like pulling like her hair out.
Is this where it starts here? I feel
no,
like that.
No, it starts long before this, Rob. And to
I'm
your
a Jeff
point,
and Britta shipper.
Okay, we really
Jess,
need to
is this the darkest timeline scenario of the Remedial Chaos Theory recap?
We need to screen these people. Yeah. Like, first of all, this is not a Jim and Pam schmoopy, because Jeff and Annie are always much more of
I do like Jeff.
they don't ever meet each other in the right time for each other to be romantic, proper romantic partners. It's not a will they, won't they. That's more of a Jeff and Britta thing, by the way. It's much, and then they finally are just like, let's just do it. But Jeff and Annie are never, like, either Annie is too immature romantically, Jeff is obviously too old, but he's also immature and not ready for a relationship. Like, it's not the same as a Jim and Pam schmoopiness, because that is
not as bad as Jim and Pam. No. That's the all-time worst.
Jeff and Britta are garbage together. They would never work. Gordon, what are your thoughts here?
Annie and Jeff started in the debate episode in season one, if I'm remembering properly. Yeah. That's where the seeds for that first planted.
I haven't seen it.
I imagine the show was pitched with a will they, won't they between, you know, Jeff and Britta, because every show needs that. But obviously no one wanted to see that, and they joked around with it enough in the later episodes. Like, there was no interest there. Where was going with this? As far as Annie and Jeff, you know, there are points where it feels like it should work out. I believe it's the one where they were running for office, where it kind of reached the point of diminishing returns, where it's like, I'm not there. And I agree with Rob. The times they cut to that during this episode, I wasn't feeling it. I wasn't rooting for them. And that's what it is you're rooting for them. And it just, you know, I've lost interest at this
point. I'm an Annie and Pete Campbell shipper till I die.
Trudy.
But I have a theory that the true darkest timeline in this episode is, like, everybody keeps saying that it was Troy when he left the room, but let me check I took very copious notes.
It was very satisfying as somebody who has remained mostly unspoiled, but, like, I feel like as I was watching the episode, I was able to start, like, piecing together what the episode was all about pretty quickly, but, like, seeing, like, everything that led up, Gordon, because I had no context for it, like Troy coming in with the pizzas and everything's on fire and all hell has broken loose. I had no context for any of that. And so that was really satisfying to finally see pay off. But the biggest piece of it that was the best was, because I had never seen this iconography before, was the mother effing troll in the fire.
Oh yeah, that's staring terrible.
Staring back at Troy, which is now my new favorite image of anything. For the year 2020, at the very least.
But I gotta, like, here's the thing, is everybody's like, Jeff leaves, everybody's happy. Troy leaves, everything goes to hell. The thing is, the reason everything went to hell was because the Raiders of the Lost Ark ball fell when the door closed. Yep. And if you watch it, the ball also fell when Shirley left. And I believe Abed was there to catch it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sold on, like, Troy being the leader or Troy being, I think we can all agree that Jeff leaves, everybody's happy. But as far as Troy leaving being the catalyst for all hell breaking loose, I'm not sure I completely agree with that. But what I thought was the darkest timeline was when Pierce left, because when Pierce leaves, that's when we get the first hint of a Troy and Britta relationship.
Oh,
yes. Which that is the worst.
Which in my book is, like, first of all, the fact that folks
saw
that.
She saw what we saw, Gordon. She knew this guy's going places.
Yeah, she heard some of his.
I don't hate that.
His many raps. But, like, to me, Troy and Britta is the equivalent of Joey and Rachel on Friends.
Yes!
I just have no interest. The relationship they should have focused on was Abed and Brie Larson. But I guess they couldn't have Brie Larson and Allison Brie. All that would have been way too confusing.
Wait, Brie Larson's on the show?
There's an spoiler episode. Alert.
For season four. She's in a few episodes, but not, they don't ever really do anything with her as they should. They should do something with her.
Okay.
But I completely agree. The Troy and Britta of it all. Like, Rob has a problem with Annie and Jeff. Like, focus on Troy and Britta. That is trash garbage. Doesn't make any sense.
That's never the thing that anywhere. Like happens that wasn't just like a joke here.
Okay. You know how we talk about season four?
Yeah.
It happens in season four. And like, it starts in season three. There are like little droplets, little hints of it. But like,
avoid those droplets. We want nothing.
We're not saying drop. We're not talking about droplets. Yeah.
It goes nowhere. It's horrible.
Yeah, Troy and Britta. I like Troy. I like Britta. You put them together. I don't like it. It's like, I like milk. I like ketchup. You put them together. Not interesting.
I don't even like that you said it like that.
Yeah, sorry.
I don't even like that went together like that. That's tough. But there's a lot in this episode that actually I thought was very funny. Even if they're like maybe smaller laughs, like toilet olives.
Toilet olives.
Yeah.
Chop busted, fellow adult. Chop busted.
toilet olives is a very funny concept, because it's just
a fancy party.
Who would do that? But simultaneously, it's where they belong. So it's funny because it's true.
Yeah. Troy eating the candy cigarette, I thought was a great moment.
That's good.
Trying to light it.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
I was really just blown away with just how much is in there in a 22-minute episode. I mean, that the amount that they fit into just this 20, like it's been a long time since I've talked about a half hour on a podcast, and like I have extensive notes.
Yeah, read us some select excerpts from your notes, Rob.
I mean, my notes are not like I suspect that you probably have more nuanced theory. My notes are like a stenographer of like it's just a readout of what happened in the episode.
Yeah, well, I think I would still like to hear like your description of certain scenes.
Yeah, if anybody's just joining us that didn't watch the episode, I could just read my notes and you can see what happened. Troy and Abed have a new part. Stop me whenever this bit is over. They have a scale model of Raiders of the Lost Ark. They ordered a real pizza as opposed to Shirley's pizza. Annie brought them a plant. Here's Jeff and Chevy Chase. I couldn't remember Pierce's name yet because it's been so long. He brought Serbian rum. Jeff has to leave early because he's going to the single malt boobs and billiards club. I was going to say at the opening of the podcast, I can't stay long because I have to be on the single malt boobs and billiards podcast. But I didn't want that to be people's first impression of me when they first put the podcast on.
No, but it's good. It's good to do a half hour in.
And they're going to play Yahtzee. Pierce called
after
it.
You spent half an hour crapping on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't mind if people think I don't love Community. I'm just, Pierce calls it something offensive. They roll the dice. They roll a two. Annie is the person that has to go get the pizza. Roxanne is played. Annie has a gun. Britta goes to the bathroom.
Why does Annie have a gun?
She lives in a really bad neighborhood. You'll see.
Annie, get your gun.
Yeah.
It comes up in this episode. It's in other episodes that Annie lives in a really terrible neighborhood. And at the end, we see Abed invites her to live with Troy and Abed.
And talk about, like, as far as narrative devices, you know, you show a gun, you got to use it. You show a bottle of rum, you've got to use it. You show a Raiders of the Lost Ark model, you got to use it. And it all comes together.
Yeah.
Chekhov's apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can Britta believe you of this, dude, even though I'm really enjoying hearing your description of everything.
We're going to go back to the narration.
Well, I kind of enjoy an episode of Community as filtered through your notes.
It's like the audiobook of the episode. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, if you need to go back to the official record of what happens when, we have it.
Yeah, we've got it. Yeah, I didn't realize that Troy and Britta is a thing. That's unfortunate. But I think that this is apparently something that some people like and some people don't. And Jess and I have been talking over the last several weeks about like tracking what the show is doing with Britta, because I have not yet really seen that they are going to turn Britta just sort of into like a punchline. She's just going to end up kind of just like being like sort of a dumb character. Yeah. But maybe it was a hard turn this week with pizza in my tummy, miso hungy.
They kind of dropped that after the first couple of rolls.
Yeah, I think it only makes it into two timelines.
Yeah, the first two.
Which is a shame because I feel like that really caught on for me at least. Pizza in my tummy, miso hungy.
Yeah. I was a big fan of Jillian Jacobs. I mentioned that
It's Gillian. We didn't correct Gillian, the record last week. Yes. So now we feel like we
Whatever. Okay. I was a big fan of Britta on the show. And then, I didn't like what they did to her. And I told you I was a Jeff and Britta OTP.
Mm-hmm.
Britta was kind of seemed like Dan Harmon's take on internet. Social justice warrior type, and it never really that's all kind of, she kind of became at that point. So maybe the Troy thing was a chance to humanize her more, but it didn't seem to work out. Like they really, especially I think as sitcoms go on, your characters become caricatures, and I don't know if anybody got that worse than Britta did.
Around the horn, I would like us all to share our various Eartha Kitt stories. Rob, let's start with you. So the Pierce really just wanted to talk about Eartha Kitt. He really wanted to make that flex, huh?
Well, I just want you to know, in my notes, I went to Wikipedia and tried to find ways to work in her conversations. So, we, like, if you were like, oh, the evil timeline, my goal should be like, but I think there, at some degree, they're like, I want to be evil. And speaking of the song, I Want to Be Evil, Eartha Kitt had a number, had a top 30 hit with that. You know, Annie, she's just an old-fashioned girl. Speaking of just an old-fashioned girl, Eartha Kitt had a hit with that in 1956.
Yeah, it's true.
I came prepared.
Do we think the story of Pierce and Eartha Kitt was apocryphal? Or is it actual?
You'll have to tell me what apocryphal means.
Yeah. Is it not true? Yeah. Is it just legend, or is it actually did Pierce have sex with Eartha Kitt?
Well, he's pretty consistent with the story across the various timelines, Jess. Right? I mean, like,
I think it's true. I think it's true because he's like. So he has like Hawthorne wipes. So there's a chance, right, with all of that, he could have met Eartha Kitt.
I'm not buying it.
No?
No. I think that he just wanted to come up with something to make the group like him. I think that
Eartha Kitt is the answer to that. I had to Google who Eartha Kitt was.
She was Catwoman.
For his youth, that would have been very, very, very
good. For his youth? Not for all of that. I had to Google who she was, and it turns out she's in Emperor's New Groove and Holes, which I was like, hell, I know.
She's Eartha Kitt. She's a legend, but like maybe with this crew, it's not really going to resonate. So, but
Was the Brie Larson of her time.
Mm.
Oh.
Yeah. I think that he baked this up to impress the group the same way that Shirley is baking the pies to impress the group.
Yeah. I just don't know why this was so like front of mind for him. Across every timeline, he needed to talk about this.
It was like he said, I'm going to
walk into that party knowing like this will be the day that I tell him what happened.
They're going to tell this lie.
Yeah. Yeah. He had that in his back pocket for a while, and he's like, this will be the one. It's time to tell everyone about Eartha Kitt. Whether it's true or false, he knew that he was going to tell that story.
Well, he'd been at home constructing the perfect lie. Like, how I get them to believe that I'm cool enough? And a good lie needs details. And he kept going there, like, you know, airplane bathroom and things like that. So good on him for constructing such a...
He had a few buzzwords in play that he knew to string together.
Mm-hmm.
Jess, in terms of episode structure, the fact that Troy leaves is the darkest timeline, but that's not the last timeline we see, or even like the penultimate timeline, right? Like we still have Abed and then we have the real one. Why do you think they played it that way? And I also did feel like maybe the Abed one is like the least memorable to me just off the top of my head. Of Abed going to get the pizza. I feel like that was kind of a strange choice structurally.
For your first question, I think they chose to do it that way with the last timeline being like the actual timeline, because I think they wanted to make it clear that like this is really what happened. I don't think they wanted to leave it up to question of like which one was the real timeline. Is the darkest timeline the real timeline? I think they wanted to make it very clear to the audience which one was true.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was the one that had Annie being asked to move in, and that's really the only plot point that seems to carry on from here. I don't think we hear about Shirley's baking again or anything else that got brought up elsewhere. So I think that's proof that the Jeff gets the pizza timeline is the actual one.
Yeah,
I have a question. When you first watched this episode, did you realize what Jeff was doing with the die? That
no,
it was a plot.
No.
I didn't pick it up at the time.
I didn't at all. I didn't at all. And so good. Put a check mark next to Jeff Winger, who's getting dragged in this episode because he is his inclusion is what's bringing all these people down. And that may be true, but also points for it's just a very shrewd move on his part. I was very envious.
Very
sure. I wish I could think that.
He got me twice. He got me in 2012 and then again.
He got me today.
Crafty Jackrabbit.
Can I also give a potentially controversial opinion about Joel McHale?
Do it.
I love Joel McHale.
Joel McHale, who Nicole Sesternino rated as five-star hot in the old podcast.
I feel like that his career In the same way that I knew Donald Glover is going to be huge, that I felt like that, Joel McHale around this time, he had done The Soup, which I was a big fan of. He graduated from The Soup. Here he is, NBC sitcom. He's the lead. Look at him. And I feel like his career has sort of like gone like the Raiders ball down into the floor.
The Tiger King people, Rob. This the Ezra Hart of the hottest early quarantine trend.
He's like, hosting Card Sharks.
Yeah, I just feel like it hasn't. This is that of the rolls of the die. This is, I feel like, ultimately went on to be one of the darker timelines for Joel McHale in terms of like the trajectory of his career at the height of Community to where we are now. I feel like it hasn't.
Joel McHale feels like he's waiting for like his Marvel Cinematic Universe moment, where like he's gonna get the villain. Call. No, he'll get the call. Maybe to be a villain or maybe to be a hero, but either way, yeah. Do the radical body morphing jest.
Isn't he on the older side for that?
Yeah, but Robert Downey Jr. was older, right, when he started as Iron Man.
I guess. Yeah. I don't see Joel McHale as like a Marvel hero.
Did you see Chris Pratt?
No, it's gone. That's gone. I feel like he could be like sort of like a Michael Keaton-esque like a villain in a movie. But I feel like it's not as bad as it got for Craig Kilborn, who I feel like is similar to Joel McHale in a lot of ways. He fell off the face of the earth. So that was really the darkest timeline for Craig Kilborn. But for Joel McHale. I just feel like I love Joel McHale.
I don't think this is a controversial take, though. Yeah, I think of all of the people on Community, the main cast at least, I mean, look at everybody else. They've mostly gone on to do pretty big things. Gillian Jacobs was on Love and Alison Brie with Glow. And you don't even need to say anything about Donald Glover. Like Joel McHale, I mean, I know Danny Pudi showed up recently.
He won an Oscar.
Yeah. Danny Pudi
and John had like 9 reality shows.
Mm-hmm. We don't even talk about him.
He's doing great. Right.
But Joel McHale kind of strikes me as like an edgier Ryan Reynolds. And I don't know if that plays well with like the wider audience. Like I saw him on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and he was kind of like barbing back and forth with Jimmy Kimmel. And like, if you didn't get his humor, it would come off as mean. Okay. So that's kind of where I see his ceiling at. I don't think he has.
Strikes me as a Glenn Howerton, a Dennis Reynolds type.
I can see that.
I love Dennis Reynolds, so it's no surprise I love Joel McHale.
I love Joel McHale. This is not an anti Joel McHale take. I'm sad.
I'm going through my mental Rolodex of all the main characters from Community, and Jess, I think you're right.
Beyond Chevy Chase, but
he's Chevy Chase. So
he still has the name Chevy Chase.
Yeah. He's in the twilight of all of that. And maybe even it might be later than that. You know, it might be a little past twilight at that point. Also, I hear rumors through my Hollywood connections that he's in the running to star in the Twilight reboot.
Whoa.
Get excited about that. That could be pretty hot.
What's happening?
Speaking of what is happening, I know we've got some significant feedback for this episode.
We do.
And I'm nervous. With this crew especially, I'm nervous for what we might be getting into next.
So let's start with the most crazy feedback we got. And hold on one second here. I have to grab something.
All right. Yeah, Jess is doing that. Josh, what did you think of the pizza in this episode?
Well, are we talking about the pizza that they needed to go and get or the pizza that Shirley made?
No, not the Shirley pizza. I don't even know what that is. But
I don't know that I remember what the cream pizza cheese looks like. I think it looked fine, right?
Ketchup and cream cheese?
Probably fine. No, ketchup and cream cheese is no good. Ketchup and cream cheese pizza is no good.
Why did the oven burn Shirley's pie so quick in that one timeline?
That's a good question.
It doesn't make sense.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, Josh, could you ask Emily to answer that question for the Great British Bake Off?
Do you want me to go right now and ask her? I can.
I'll wait till after the podcast is over.
But you'll take your answer off.
Yeah, will a pie go on fire if you leave it in the oven like it's 90 seconds too long?
Probably 90 seconds feels. I don't know. I mean, I guess
only if you're broiling it. That's the only way that happens.
If you're broiling,
can you broil a pie?
No,
you shouldn't. I don't think you should broil unless you're trying to brulee a pie. You know, if you're trying to brulee a pie, then I do think maybe a broiler is probably not the worst. But I think even if you're bruleeing a pie, you want to do like hand torch. It's been a long time since I've bruleed a pie. All right. So Jess has props.
So this Jess is my prop.
So yeah, Jess is holding a six-sided die.
Yes, I am. So, Rob and Gordon, you probably don't know, but we have a feedback rivalry between Riley, who writes a lot of essays, and Stefan, who is the essayist.
Yeah.
And they decided to team up on their feedback this week. Why? I don't know, but they did. And it has a theme, and the theme is that they created six different timeline arguments in honor of the episode. And I am supposed to toss a die and read the feedback that is associated with the number that it lands on. So I'm going to do that, and it might.
But only the one that you land on, and so the rest of it will be gone to the annals of history.
Correct.
They gave feedback on each timeline, and you're going to read one of them.
I don't know if it's on each timeline. I just know that each one is associated with a die number.
They have feedback that is associated with a number, and depending on what you roll is the feedback that we will hear.
Right, and I dropped the die on the floor, so I'm going to use that number. So
All right, so, Jess it's all off to a troubling start as Jess has dropped a die. Lucky number six, all right?
All right, so here
max
is the
score.
Is this concerned the timeline where Britta got the pizza?
It is. I think so. Yes, because it is called the second worst timeline.
Ooh, Riley ranked them.
Apparently, Riley says clearly the actual worst timeline for the characters, but best for us outside of the darkest timeline is when the die rolls to five and Abed goes and gets the pizza. I mean, everyone ends up hating each other by the end. It isn't overly crazy and wild and iconic. Instead, all the issues come to the surface and they resent each other. It's a sad timeline. Stefan says, roll two where Annie leaves. Why, you may be wondering, is this the second worst timeline? Let me paint you a word picture. Because Annie leaves. Riley says, hear me out, Stefan. At the end of that timeline, Annie comes back. Boom. Argument busted. The group is fine at the end of that timeline. The group is emotionally destroyed at the end of mine. And Stefan says, I'm sure everyone is emotionally destroyed in whatever timeline you are in.
Riley and Stefan, just record this. I'm not following the dialogue, but back and forth with Riley and Stefan.
They spent a lot of time on this.
And I thought we were going to talk about one timeline. They're bouncing all over the place.
They spent a lot of time on this. If you want to know more, and if they are amenable, I think we could release the arguments in our community building channel in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord.
I have a 3.5-page Word document, so we can certainly release that. Yes, it is. It is a lot.
They deserve it. The patrons deserve it.
Yes, release the tape or the document.
Based on what they said, that the Annie timeline—that's the first one. That's just level setting, right? All of that is just like, with the exception of learning Annie has a gun, we don't learn a whole lot there. It's just like it's kind of like your level. I'm using my hands, like people can see me.
You're level setting with your hands.
For those listening at home, I'm level setting with my hands, and that's what that Annie timeline is. And then the Abed timeline. That there you get the Jeff and Annie kiss. So that's probably one of Rob's darkest. nobody's there to stop Britta from freaking out over the pies, and that starts off the.
It feels icky to me, Jeff and Annie.
There is a significant age difference.
We've talked about it. It's come up.
They do make a point that like we try not to sexualize her because she's so young.
Right.
So once you kind of set that, like I know years have passed, but not that many years. So once you kind of set that precedent, it is a little weird to have somebody older putting the moves on her.
Mm-hmm. Jess, is this tough? Is this difficult?
Here's the thing. I don't think they're not like Chandler and Monica. Like it's not like you're saying that Chandler and Monica shouldn't be together, right? Or like Ben and Leslie. Like it's not the same, but I just think there's a growth arc there. And by the end of season six, I could see them coming back together at a later point in life. Like there's chemistry there. There's something there. I'm not saying it's supposed to work in season one because I agree. I think emotionally and just life-wise, Annie is very immature. She doesn't have much experience. And it does feel like he's taking advantage in that he has a lot of experience and he's a womanizer and on and on. But I think when you get to the end, it makes more sense. So this is stage setting, in my opinion.
Level setting.
Level setting. I think we can all agree that Jeff belonged with Professor Slater from season one.
Professor Slater, the one who's like the sees the day.
Yeah.
No, he's Professor Whitman. You're talking about the Halloween episode that you watched, episode. Josh. Professor Slater is in that.
Yeah. It would have been fun to see him seizing the day, though. Could have been good, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he was supposed to seize the day with Britta.
Right.
Right.
Gordon, Annie being used as the level setter, right? Like, because there must have been a lot of like internal conversations in the writer's room about, well, how are we going to start this thing? And what is like who is the person that makes the most sense to be the level setter? Why does it make sense for it to be Annie? Is there an argument for it being someone else in your opinion?
Well, Annie goes away. There's no Annie and Jeff, which was a pretty significant part of it. And then, you know, you can have, you know, with you know, Britta going to the bathroom. And I believe, is it Abed that meets up with her there? Or is it Troy? I don't recall.
Troy, right?
But, you know, like she, you know, with the exception of if the exclamation point at the end is going to be Jeff goes away and everybody's happy, the opposite of that is Annie goes away and things are pretty much normal because, you know, Annie's partner isn't there to Annie's narrative partner isn't there to continue the you know their story. So it made sense just to start things off with her being gone. They can find the gun. The gun will be important later. Chekhov's gun, things along that line.
Rob, have you ever stood up into a ceiling fan?
No, it would have to be a very low ceiling fan. I mean, I don't know how tall Joel McHale is. 6'6".
I don't think he's that tall. I'd say he's maybe 6'2".
I mean, that's a very low ceiling fan that, I mean, if I was hitting my head on a ceiling fan, am I standing on a chair? I mean, is this a tiny house? How is this happening?
Joel McHale, 6'4". This conversation following on the heels of a conversation, I believe, on Post Show Recaps Theater this week, the revelation that Michael Crichton was 6'9".
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
How about that? He would have stood up into the ceiling fan as well.
T-Rex-esque proportion for him.
It's a large, maybe, you know, there's a reason why Jurassic Park was so resonant. Understand what it would be like to be the taller species.
Yeah.
Tiny little arms.
Jess, what other feedback do we have?
Geek Furious said, I was doing weekly reviews of the show back then, and I gave it the highest score I ever gave a community episode, but I remember the reaction was not universal love it appears to have today. Some people thought it was pure genius. Some said it wasn't, in quotes, funny. Which we kind of talked about a little bit earlier. I did get a bunch of feedback saying people thought like, it's not great. Albert actually wrote in and said, for some reason, I didn't like this one as much, even though it was probably my favorite episode when I saw it originally. My friends and I have a phrase we use about overhyped episodes. We call it walkabout. That name should sound familiar because it was coined when one of our friends didn't like the season one episode of Lost Walkabout because we overhyped it. So now any hyped episode or movie is called a walkabout.
Now, you would think that I'd be deeply triggered by that. And I'm not. I get it. You're speaking my lang. I understand what you're trying to say here. I would still put, you know, we have long since abandoned trying to rank these episodes, Jess, because the way we're doing this, it's not fair for me to do that. But I maintain to this point that no episode of Community has popped for me, pop, just to get in front of that for me, the way that contemporary American Poultry did. Like that was like that was a turning point for me. And I think that it's going to be very hard for any episode to be a favorite episode of Community for me over that, or maybe Abed's Uncontrollable Christmas. I think that those are still the two at the very, very top for me. Top. With that being said, I can imagine assigning sort of like the same values onto Remedial Chaos Theory as you would onto Walkabout for Lost, which is that these are game changer episodes. That like if you walked into them without the context of like without knowing where television would go beyond those points, I think that that's an important piece of it, and that's why I'm thinking a lot about Rick and Morty with this episode, because I think this is like an opening shot towards a lot stranger, crazier, weirder things that Dan Harmon specifically gets into with Rick and Morty. And so like, did this episode like hit me with the thunderous force that maybe it hit a bunch of people when they were watching this episode for the first time or encountering this episode for the first time? Not for me, but that doesn't mean I can't like respect the hell out of it and really enjoy the things that I really enjoyed about it. And it's definitely one that I think like thematically and character wise, like to the point, Gordon, that like you were saying, like my theory is like this is an episode that that rewards multiple readings, right? Like I think that this is an episode where you can like you can draw a lot of that stuff out. And I think that there's similar stuff going on with Walkabout on Lost, but even less so. Really, it's about one major turnkey moment. So I think that that's fair. I think that that's a fair assessment of the episode. I didn't know what the full extent of Remedial Chaos Theory was, but based on like the little bits of hints that I got either from social or people who've come through our little community building that we have here, I think it mostly measured up to about where I expected it would be in terms of content.
Josh, something to think about is I read Watchmen for the first time probably around when the movie came out. So it wasn't revolutionary to me. Back when this episode came out, were anybody talking in the more public media, is anybody talking about alternate timelines and things exactly. like that? Do you think your opinion of it might be different if you had watched it back then?
That's what I'm saying for sure.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing for like Walkabout. Like I encountered that. That was like the second episode of Lost I saw. It was the fourth episode altogether. And I saw it very early, and that was a moment where I was already pretty in the tank, but then that happened. It's like, yeah, I'm here for the whole thing. Like I'll never miss a week. Over my dead body will I miss a week.
I think this is different than Walkabout. If you're using the term Walkabout as like an overly hyped episode of Community, then I guess that's fair, especially like Gordon was saying, not watching it live, knowing that it's overly hyped, knowing that it's many people's favorite episode, you're kind of setting yourself up to fail a bit when you're going to watch it after that. But I would honestly compare like contemporary American Poultry more to Walkabout in that that was like one of the first like genre heavy episodes that people were like, holy shit, what is this show doing?
Right.
Like, this is new, this is innovative. And I think that I would say contemporary American Poultry is one of those like sucks you in. Okay, now I'm all in on this show and I'm going to continue watching it more so than, I mean, we're in season three now,
know? Yeah. I mean, contemporary American Poultry, Jess, was definitely my Walkabout, right? In that like traditional, pure, unoffensive,
good Walkabout or bad Walkabout?
Good Walkabout. Great Walkabout. Best Walkabout.
Yeah. If I recall in season three, like I feel like that are the first couple episodes of season three kind of not as beloved, because what I recall at the time was like I remember sort of like the with the highs and the lows of Community, you know, being very like, oh, what does Alan Sepinwall say about this? I got to go and look it up. And I feel like that the season three comes out a little flat. And then there's this episode and it's like, Community's back, baby. They still got it.
Yeah, no, you're correct. And you did say this in your podcast with Gordon back in the day that you weren't like super high on the first half of season three. I would agree. I think that this episode is a high. It does have other good episodes, but to me, they're in the latter half of season three. I'm talking, you know, digital estate planning and pillows and blankets and stuff like that. Those are the high highs of season three. It had a little bit of a slow beginning, I think. And then this episode kind of just smacks you in the face.
Yeah. I had a blast. And I love the idea of there now being an evil timeline where Troy and Abed are wearing felt goatees.
Yes.
I feel like, Rob, I had an idea. Yes. And I don't know if you want to talk to somebody to get this on the merch shop quickly. The recently relaunched.
Yes.
Rob has a podcast merch store. How is it possible that we live in the darkest timeline where we have to be wearing masks in order to not kill each other and ourselves with disease?
Yep.
And it does not exist yet that there is a mask that just has a goatee. So that like it's clearly anyone who watches Community will know like, oh, they're wearing the darkest timeline mask.
Yeah, that is
feels
funny.
Like low hanging fruit that feels like print the money. Which, as Gordon now knows, is all I care about.
Yeah, that is a good idea. That I wanted to ask you all, do you feel like that, do we live in the timeline in which, Jeff Winger has one arm, Britta has a blue streak, Pierce is dead.
Absolutely, right?
All happened because of Troy went to go get the pizza.
Is that why? So we live in the world where Troy Yeah, where Troy went and got the pizza. Gordon, do you think that that's right?
Boy, you know, this year has been such a roller coaster work. Like, I try to, like, just from my own personal experience, you know, Lindsay and I have been taking the lockdown so seriously just because we have a daughter on the way and now a daughter that's here. But, you know, she's happy and healthy, so that's good. But then a couple of weeks ago, my parents came down with COVID, so that's bad. You know, there's been good and bad this year, so I don't know if I'm quite ready to call this the darkest timeline, because it could be a lot. I hate to say it, it could be a lot worse. So I'm on the fence on that one.
So we might be more in the timeline where Abed went to go get the pizza and then everybody was fighting. So it's not the darkest, but it's pretty dark.
The apartment is not on fire, but it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Or it was on fire, but we were able to
But the dog is fine. Yeah.
The dog is fine. The dog is fine. Jess, I think the tell is we're not all in goatees. You know, that would let us know.
Yeah.
I think we're, I think third, I keep saying this, but I think fourth quarter 2020 has redeemed a lot of the first three quarters.
Fourth quarter 2020. Well. Yeah. Yeah.
Can I also ask another spoilery question about the darkest timeline? Because we revisit the darkest timeline, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The darkest timeline tries to come into the current
a normal timeline. It's a bad episode.
There's a whole episode on that. Like I remember feeling there were like some other like tags like checking in with like the darkest timeline.
It's very obvious that they're trying to redo something that they just had no business trying to redo. And at the time it was just very bad.
But that's I feel like that's almost like a symptom of the larger problem with Community, where it's like they got a hit off something. It's like, all right, how do we do this again? Even with paintball, it's like, oh, paintball was a hit. How do we do paintball again? Where it's just, you know, it's you get so addicted to like all the pats on the back of Alan Sepinwall saying like, oh, bravo. And then just trying to, they're chasing that high. And it's very hard to get back to it.
Now, maybe Gordon would be able to speak on this, because I for sure don't know. But like, could that be something where like the studio or like the station or whoever the powers that be are like, guys, we need you to do another paintball episode.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, I imagine that they probably, you know, especially because Community was part of this, like, you know, Thursday night NBC comedies, as Rob and I know, you know, used to be like, you know, they're the brand of NBC. So I think they've had Dan Harmon do jokes about like, you know, ratings and how they continually go lower and lower. And I imagine there was a lot of pressure from NBC to be like, hey, people love the paintball, bring it back. So, you know, it's you can fight that for so long, but when you're, it's probably easier to fight it when you're a successful show. And, you know, Community, you know, it kind of got a reputation for a show that was hard to get into, or like this weird show. So, you know, I could understand them folding the pressure to do those things.
Yeah. And I don't know if there's been any sort of like oral history of like what went wrong between Dan Harmon and NBC in terms of like it getting so bad that they end up like removing him as the showrunner on the show. But I think that probably a lot of the things that we're talking about like were problems that were going on behind the scenes also.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know. I mean, should we get the chance to dig deeper into the series? I think that's something that I'll definitely want to pay closer attention to. As it stands, like just somebody who's like reporting in that space, you know, it was hard to not see that story. But as somebody who didn't
Seed,
watch
baby.
The show, yeah, seeds that story. I'm so confused about the seeds. Anyway, Jess, do we have more feedback? Because I actually do have a piece of feedback that I could read.
Whoa.
Yeah, go ahead with your feedback.
I got a message that was I'm gonna keep the person anonymous unless this person would like to reveal themselves, and once they hear this message on the podcast, they will be able to reach out and
Ken Jeong,
Gillian Jacobs.
Guys, it's Joel McHale, and I think he's gonna be pretty upset with some of the stuff that we had to say.
He's not five star.
We're just disappointed that his career didn't pan out hope.
So Joel McHale writes in. Joel writes in, hi, I'm a longtime listener of RHAP and a patron. And a listener of post-show recap since day one. I appreciate all the great work you guys have been doing, so thank you for all the entertainment you've provided me over the years. However, I must admit that I am cheap, and I don't know if it's in the Ryan Aiken sense, Rob. it took me years to become an RHAP patron, and I would not have taken the plunge on post-show recap so soon except for the fact that I will not let it be said that I did not do my part to reach 1,000 patrons and unlock the community rewatch. Community is such a special show to me. We know, Joel. So I just wanted to reach out and implore you to find a way to keep it going, even if we do not reach that goal by December 31st. Perhaps keep doing the community building podcast indefinitely or some other loophole. I realize this goal has a ticking clock that will soon run down, but it would be such a shame to miss this opportunity to have my favorite podcast network do a full watch podcast about one of my favorite shows. Thanks for all the great work, not Joel McHale.
Signed, Marvity Shallow.
So that is the feedback we received, Jess. Now, Jess, you have a six-sided die with you.
Yes.
So if you could hold that up just for posterity for the three of us who are looking at this right now. What I would like you to do, Jess, I'm going to ask you to roll the die, and whatever number it lands on is going to correlate with one of six choices that I will have written down about what to do with community building should we not reach the 1,000 patron goal by 11:59:59 p.m. Eastern time on December 31st. We will not reveal it here, though.
Am I rolling it right now?
Yeah, because it would be unlucky to reveal it right now. So what you'll do is you'll roll it now, you'll tell us the number, and then at a later date, I will reveal what that number corresponds with.
Okay, I'm rolling it right now.
There we go.
Okay. One of my favorite numbers on a six-sided die, we got three.
Three.
Timeline number
one of the top six.
Timeline number three is one of the top six numbers on a six-sided die. So timeline number three is where we have gone. Hmm. And at a later date, I shall reveal what happens.
Oh, Rob, it's a cliffhanger.
Yeah. Yeah, Rob, do you remember we did that podcast where we rated the sides of a die and we forgot four and people got so mad?
You just legitimate thing.
Four fans were pissed. I mean,
did you forget four sides of the die or the number four?
Yeah.
It's a very popular side of the die.
We were like, first you forgot about Niles Crane, then you forgot about the number four on the dice. They were all very mad.
Cheese brain.
Yes. We play a lot of Mario Party at my house, and everybody has their own custom die. And sometimes like your die might be like 5555 minus three coins.
I hate that in the new Mario Party. That is trash. I hate that.
My kids are like, wow, very impressed with Bowser's dice.
Wow. It's amazing.
Troy and Abed would have been blown away.
I don't want to leave this a complete cliffhanger if we go to timeline three. So Robert Gordon, if you check your emails, you should be seeing that I gave you a list of everything that happens should we go into either timelines one through six. So that's just for you, though. It's just it's not a cliffhanger for the two of you. For the rest of the audience, no, keep that private if you don't mind. But just for posterity, so people know that this is all on the level that. Yeah.
Got it. Wink.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty lucky that we didn't get timeline five, right, Rob? That one.
Yeah.
Seems,
that oh, one my God. Special. Yeah. Oh, my God.
For everybody. But timeline three is controversial, too. So,
we'll keep it
under our hats for now, Jess.
Josh, I do have a little bit of trivia as well, just for something to keep in mind going forward. That the securing the rights to the song Roxanne pretty much used up the whole entire season's music budget. And so as a result, they use the song Daybreak in a lot of season three episodes. And once you hear it, you can't unnotice it. And it's in so many episodes.
That's interesting.
Just something to keep an ear out.
Are they not allowed to just use Roxanne over and over again?
No, they did the whole song at the end.
Well,
but I think they'd have to pay for it every single episode now.
Oh, I was going
to
say, could they just use that throughout the season, since was it a one-shot deal? And now we've got Roxanne for season three.
What a weird hill to die on.
I agree.
No, it has to be that song. That's it. It's the only song that works.
Fair, it is iconic. So
it's iconic, but I'm sure you could.
It's a great song, but there had to have been something else they could have done.
I'm not that kind of idealist where it's like, it's this or nothing. We're walking away.
It had to be a song you're willing to listen to six times in one episode. So it had to be a good song.
Good first line, too. Good first line.
If Roxanne was too expensive, too rich for your blood, Rob, what would you have aimed for?
any other piece of music. That, yeah. I don't know if there's any other one that jumps to mind, but I will say that that I was going to just beat me to it, but I was going to do, when you introduced me on the podcast, I was going to say, Wiggler,
yeah.
You don't have to podcast community if you don't get patrons. But you know, I
want to record that,
that
later.
Yeah,
yeah, this is bad.
I can send you a karaoke track,
Chess. If you, yeah. I didn't. I woke up this morning, took care of the baby, took a shower, etc. I didn't intend to come on this podcast and poach somebody. But if you want to do a podcast of people that like community, I'd be all for it.
I really like community. What are you talking about? I'm having a great time.
I went to a Paley Fest of a panel hosted by Alan Sepinwall. Don't question my
you're name dropping Alan Sepinwall the same way Pierce name drops Eartha Kitt.
Yikes! A lot to unpack. A lot to unpack.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Rob likes community, but does he have the cult love for it that is necessary to come on the podcast?
They had me. They lost me.
But because they didn't get you back with season 5? Come on.
I think I must have tried it, but I don't know. I think I was probably busy with something going on in my
own
life.
Your heart was broken, Rob, and I think it, like many of us, when you're wounded in that way, it can be difficult to open yourself up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know. So, look, you know, I love the community. That is the thing that I'm loving the most about this show, because everyone has such a specific response to the show. And it's been a long time since I've seen a show that has elicited that kind of reaction. It's like, it really is a cousin of Lost in that way. Or like this was a show that meant a lot to, let's say, I don't know, Gordon, just as an example, just as a theoretical. And then like the final season is the final season. It's like, oh, that show is trash. You know, so some people have that take. And I'm just theoretically putting that at Gordon.
I'll put it in Ghostbusters 2 terms for you, because I know that's something you respond to. Ghostbusters 2, I don't think anybody considers it a good. I don't think anybody considers it to be a good or great movie, but there's something nice about seeing them all together in jumpsuits busting ghosts. And the community eventually, like I said, the latter seasons aren't as good, but there, I do enjoy these people. I do enjoy spending time with them. So there is that level of merit to it.
Yeah. Jess, which season had Mike Ehrmantraut on it?
Seasons 5 and 6.
5 and 6. Okay.
Is he like on the show? On the show?
Yeah, he's a regular. He gets added to the cast.
Jonathan Banks is a series regular.
Spoilers, Rob.
Community. If you want to hear from me on Community, you got to keep up with all the patrons. Okay.
This is a fairly big deal. That's not
Omar coming too.
Oh my God.
Omar is on it.
Okay.
Omar is on it.
What happened to Legos?
Doing a lot of stunt casting.
All right. Well, let's make sure to get to 1,000 patrons so that we can get Rob back for the season 5 and 6 podcasts to just do his Jonathan Banks impression.
Okay. I have to.
Fairly next level.
I'll try to contain my excitement.
I forgot how much I love Rob's impression.
No half measures, Wiggler.
podcast. Rob, are there any you're a marketer, you've sold many a good on sure. many a great promise. Is there anything that Jess and I should be thinking about to like really kick things up a notch? As the we are here in December, this is the first community building of December so far, so we're in the game time month, time is running out. What should we do to like short of like a Russian bot farm, what should we do to like kick this thing up into overdrive?
So, this is a layered question, but I just wonder if you have all your eggs in the community basket become a patron, so we'll do more community. But I feel like that you should be a patron if you love Josh Wiggler and everything post show recaps, not necessarily to be so community specific.
Right. Well, that's not true. Josh is talking about the Mike Bloom Brandt steal of it all at the, what is it, the 500 patron level?
We're talking about the Discord. We do have other goals to unlock along the way. That if this is further incentive, that by going on the path towards being the 1,000th patron of Post Show Recaps, here are some of the things that you're potentially unlocking. The return of Most Shows Recapped. A podcast that we did once upon a while, where we tried to recap most shows, as the name implies. So that's something that
I recall. Part. Yeah,
there's also the debut of the Wiggle Bloom, which will be Mike Bloom and I doing shenanigans. And then there's the community building. So those are some tiers. Those are some hits on the march towards 1,000. Of course, you also get access to the Discord, which is the happiest place on the internet right
really
now.
Is. Mm-hmm. We come up with a new holiday for next year called Snackation.
Yeah.
And it's going to be
Gordon's eyes just lit up. He got really pumped about Snackation.
No, here's the thing, Josh. This is your guys' world, and you do a fantastic job of it.
The prelude to a butt.
I'm just going to throw this out there. What community tattoo are you prepared to get
when you hit 1,000
patrons?
Huh.
And the beard only goatee. Beard goatee tattoo.
No, I think it's got to be the Greendale human beings logo, right?
the flag.
Third nipple.
That doesn't mean much to me yet.
It will.
I'm sure. Well, maybe it will. We don't know. Maybe a chicken finger, because I love contemporary American culture.
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you think that would look like on a body?
Not good.
Like poop.
What would it look like?
That might look like poop.
What would it look like on the human body? I don't know. Willing to consider finding out. Do you like how I feel? I'm willing.
Well, you get it. You get a die.
Roll the dice again. Yeah,
hey, you get a die.
Yeah. Yeah.
We get six tattoo
six
ideas.
Tattoos.
Yeah. All right. If we roll a two, I get the chicken finger. She got it.
So stupid.
Yeah, I know. That's what we do. All right. Well, you know, think about it, people. You know, if you're listening, because we keep posting these free on the internet. But to get them conveniently in your podcast feed, you got to sign up for the thing. So, you know, there's some things to consider. There's just some stuff to meditate on. Jess, do we have the game where it's time to guess the future episode of Community based purely on the title of the episode?
Yeah, so I give Josh two different episode titles, and he has to guess what the plot is, essentially. And we do this every week. We may or may not be watching these episodes. Yeah. The first one is Laws of Robotics and Party Rights.
Laws of Robotics and Party Rights?
Yes.
Is this a two-parter?
No.
It feels like a lot to cram into a single episode. Laws of Robotics and Party Rights. I assume there is a development in the AI realm, thanks in no small part to Troy and Abed accidentally pushing a computer towards self-awareness, and that computer then alerting other computers towards the state of actualization. And one of their first obstacles that they must overcome as a sentient species at the dawn of their existence is how to party and what are the limits. And at the end, they learn that partying is best accompanied by a Thanksgiving feast.
Nailed it.
Perfect. Second one is called Repilot.
Okay, so Repilot is the story of Pierce and Eartha Kitt. They do the full flashback episode. And much like the movie Airplane, Pierce has to fly the plane. And he gets them all to safety, and he and Eartha Kitt have missed their Thanksgiving dinners, so they go to a diner and eat turkey together.
I love it.
Did I get it?
Nailed it. Where's the bell, Rob? He got it. There you go. So, do you want to know where we are going next?
Yeah, so if that's where we're up to. All right, so we've got... what do we've got on the clock here, Jess?
We have three left.
It is interesting to me that we've got three episodes of Community to watch left on Community Building before we hit the deadline. And we are just right now at season three, episode four. That doesn't bode
feels
well.
Very bottom top heavy.
That
says the guy who hates everything past season three.
I'm just saying.
His argument. It does. Yeah. It lends some credence to what Rob is saying.
It's not. I never said he was incorrect. Seasons one, two, and three are better than. Well, I don't know. Seasons two and three are better than seasons four, five, and six.
Okay.
Hey, I heard Chappelle say that season one builds to greatness.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. But we are heading into another doubleheader next week with two guests.
Okay.
So we are watching season three, episodes 13 and 14, which are a digital exploration of interior design and pillows and blankets. And we are watching those episodes with Phil Thompson and Grace Leader.
Amazing. All right. I'm really pumped for that. That's going to be fun. Phil and I have been DMing lightly about some possible things to talk about on the movie side once the movie club is opening up some upcoming slots. And Grace and I, and maybe next week could be a great opportunity for Grace and I to air some of the things that she and I have been talking about as far as a potential post-show recaps podcast project to encompass this year of 2020 in a fun way. So let's put a pin in that. We can unpin it when we get to the podcast and maybe open it up for some workshopping.
Beautiful.
How about that? That's super fun. Rob, this was a delight to have you on here. What else do you got going on besides taking some time out on a Saturday morning to talk about Community?
Well, I just want to say that this was very fun to be here. It was very fun to go back and revisit Community. Please don't take away that I regret my time with Community, because this was a lot of fun. And I really did enjoy that. This was such a breeze watching a sitcom, 22 minutes. It's like, what? That's it? That's all I have to watch for this? So I love that. And I also want to say that Jess Sterling is a great podcaster, and I'm very excited that you're able to get her here in this spot, because I hadn't really heard Jess hosting a podcast before.
Jess and, kills it each and every week.
Thanks.
Great
Jess
job,
and I have a very great time on this podcast.
We do. We have fun.
Here. Productive, like post-production meetings too. Like we really drilled down into the salt of the earth to bring Community Building to life.
And as far as what I'm doing, you know, a lot of great stuff talking about Survivor listing, talking with T-Bird has been a lot of fun, catching up with a lot of Survivor alumni.
Yes, is T-Bird on the list for people to talk about Community?
If T-Bird watches Community,
she would. If you asked her to watch it, like, okay, I gotta be honest, I don't really know the show, but I'll watch it.
As a veteran for T-Bird, having appeared in the repilot episode, I think it'd be really fun to get her on.
Yes, she could weigh in on the logistics of Eartha Kitt and Pierce. Also check out from over the weekend that Robin Akiva need a PR firm. We had a lot of fun trying to rebrand a bunch of people, places, and things that may have been left by the wayside by modern times, and we try to figure out some ways to bring some things back. Maybe Community could have been on the list.
Rob, there's been a push in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord for a Robin Akiva episode.
Of what? Of season three, episode seven of Community?
Rob and Akiva receive a challenge.
Of what?
There's been some talk of what would happen if Rob and Akiva had to debate the Post Show Recaps team.
For what kind of debate?
I don't know. I'm just reporting back what I've seen.
Yeah, the basic premise was that any of the PSR podcasters could hold their weight, if not demolish you and Akiva.
Yeah, no lies detected.
That's the podcast, and that's the
podcast. I have no doubt. I have no doubt that a lot of very smart people on Post Show Recap
and Josh Wigler, Gordon Holmes.
Akiva didn't even do a great job debating me.
No, Gordon, what's going on? New life in the Holmes household. I believe Wiggler Holmes is the name.
Her nickname is Wiggle, and sometimes that becomes Wiggler, and then that gets a little awkward because.
Yes.
Yeah. So what I'm doing now is begging a 3-month-old to sleep, also to eat. Also, when she uses the restroom, I prefer she does it in a diaper.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on with Survivor.
How's fatherhood?
It's every cliche, man. It's everything every parent has said is true, man. It's the best. It's the worst. I'm exhausted. I'm elated. My community. She is seasons 2 and 3 of Community.
That's great. That's great. That seems like high praise.
She's my wife is my favorite thing. She is a very close second. She's amazing.
That's awesome.
With Survivor being on hiatus, I was going to say I have free time, but the baby absolutely don't. But we at Comcast have been doing this new project called Xfinity Hangouts, where we do celebrity interviews. Over the summer, we did the cast of The Capture. I just did the Moonbase 8. Keep your eyes peeled.
Great cast.
What's that? Moonbase 8?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. The show's funny, too. I'll be doing one with Phil Keoghan in the next couple of days.
Oh.
Heading into the end of The Amazing Race. They actually did us a solid. We had a costume contest at work, and he was a judge, and he did a fantastic job. This is kind of bizarre. I've entered into not residency, but we'll be working with Gallery 1988, which is a pop culture.
I just bought a poster from them.
Okay. I'll be working with them in the
early
future.
From Lost with a big Dharma Ranch, tub.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one. Yeah,
yeah, so it's cool. I'm looking forward to getting it.
Right. I've been doing like digital art with like T-Fury and Ripped Apparel for a while, and then got contact with them, and they like my stuff. So I'll be doing things with them in the future. There is a TV-themed summer show, and keep your eyes peeled. There might be a Survivor-themed piece for me. So
amazing.
Awesome. That's what with all my so much spare time, I have no idea when I'm going to get any of this done. I had to like as the gaming editor now, I had to do something with Call of Duty, and just downloading it with having a 3-month-old at me being responsible for keeping her alive has been a challenge, much less not having the ability to play it. So it's an adventure. It's fun.
Gordon's tweeting as well. People can follow your tweets at Gordon Holmes.
Yes, on Twitter at Gordon Holmes, on Instagram at Gordon W.
W. Holmes. The W stands for Wiggler.
The W stands for Wiggle Fan.
Yeah.
Not unlike Swim Fan.
I love Swim Fan. You want to talk Swim Fan on a podcast sometime? You just call me up. Emily Fox is going to require her presence as well because she loves Swim
Deal.
Fan. Deal. Cool. Gordon, I love you, man. This was great catching up in podcast form.
I agree.
And as we said, let's do that offline too soon.
Yeah, and I'm new to the Jess fan club, but like fantastic job. Like, this was great.
So Jess is a legend. Jess is a legend. Jess, speaking of legends, Jess had eyes on some legendary action in the post-show recaps patron Discord yesterday.
There's a lot happening.
We just leave that there as like something. Mike Bloom did something, Rob.
Mike Bloom
went full bloom in the post-show recaps patron Discord in a way that I've never heard Mike Bloom go full bloom on a podcast before.
Oh my God!
It happened. We pinned it. If you become a Discord member at the $10 level on Patreon,
go check it out immediately.
It's kind of like Walkabout and Remedial Chaos Theory. You had to be there.
Yes, it is in the television channel. If you're,
this might be the Walkabout of Discord comments where it's overhyped, but it was a lot in the moment.
It was so much, and it was so wonderful, and I'm happy I witnessed it.
It was a lot. It was a lot. Jess is also podcasting. If you're new to the Jess Sterling fan club, shit 90s shows taught me.
Yes, we just did the episode of Boy Meets World where Topanga has a crush on Eric, so that was fun. And then we also just are releasing in the next couple days a Rugrats Hanukkah episode with Mike Bloom, PSR's own Mike
Speaking
Bloom.
Of, I hope that he doesn't go full bloom on that one.
There were a couple moments, but not nearly as full bloom as Discord Mike Bloom.
Yeah.
And then we have some more holiday content coming up. You'll see another recognizable name shortly on that front.
It's me.
It is.
It's me. It's me. All right.
And someone might be saying, I'll be back, but in a holiday way. I'm not very good at teasing things. I don't know what
else. Oh, man. Someone's going to be really excited about saying the words Geo Bowman over and over again. All right, that's gonna do it. Remedial Chaos Theory.
Can I say one more thing that actually two more things. Jeff Winger returns with the pizza way in too fast. That he comes back like
that makes
30
sense,
seconds.
You know? He's just like in and out. He just doesn't want to miss the thing.
Yeah. And two, that Wiggler comes up quite a bit at our house because we're playing a lot of Super Mario Kart, and there is a game called Don't Wake Wiggler. That's one of the mini games.
Yeah.
And it is a big topic of conversation because it is the most dreaded mini game. Because it involves a major jump scare. I don't know if anybody's like sent you screenshots of this, but you have to you have to pet Wiggler. Wiggler is the giant caterpillar in Super Mario lore.
Yeah,
and you stroke Wiggler, and then at some point, one too many strokes, Wiggler explodes. It's like a jump scare. And it terrifies my kids. And every time
Rob heard Mike went full bloom and decided, I'm not going to be left out.
Yeah, they're like, oh, Dad, I hope it's not. Don't wake Wiggler. Yeah. Dad, please not. Don't wake Wiggler.
Not to mention, that game sucks because it's just like all luck. That one is the worst mini game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But before we move on, just one last thing. three last things. Just remember, if they get to 1,000 by the end of the year, Josh Wiggler will get a tattoo of a chicken finger waving a community flag.
Yeah, so that's the rumor.
There you go.
That's what he is. That's what he is committed to.
I think I said I promise that I'll
nothing
consider
else.
It. I promise that I'll consider it.
Josh is committed to getting this tattoo. Yeah.
I'm committed to considering it.
An unbreakable oath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said three things, or is that just a joke?
No, I was just being a jerk.
Oh, okay. I was like, what's two and three?
This is like podcasting with my aunt when you're like trying to inch out of the door and she's like, oh, and one more thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like slowly back.
All right, five more things.
This is like my neighbor. Yeah. My neighbor, like, oh, I think the conversation's naturally ending. And they're like, ah, but I got more. I'm like, ah. Except this is a lot more enjoyable than that. That's tough. That's tough. We've had such a great time here. This was incredible. This podcast lives up to the hype, exceeds the hype. This podcast is no walkabout, or at least it's a walkabout in the good sense. Now, I was going to close this out with karaoke rendition of Roxanne, but I am officially worried about the licensing fee. So let's just throw it back to Corey B to close this out. We'll be back next week with more community building. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye-bye.
New to the show, gathers a team, goes with the flow and the talent to see. It's what you said you want to hear. But did you know it expires at the end of the year? Without 1,000 patrons by that day.